In physics, 80% of the work is to just do the dimensional analysis right, and then everything else are details. Well, I'm lying, but that's roughly.
So one, right?
Sorry?
Mass dimension one, right?
Yeah, perfect, yeah. So, because F has a dimension two, so that's dimension four, minus three is one, so this has to have mass dimension one. Okay, so now, so imagine you're taking this theory, the details will not matter, and actually, at the level I'm going to work with, it will not matter whether you look at this theory, but I chose this theory because it's more fun. Take an operator OX. There's some gauge invariant local operator in the theory, like it could be a trace F square, for example. Okay, X minus Y, XY. Actually, at zero coupling, or at, yeah. Well, I'm going to say something that is, so let's say that this guy has some dimension n, then to leading order, you're going to get something like x to the minus 2 to the n, okay? That's just from classical physics. Exactly, it's like computing the Green's function. It's like computing the propagator. The propagator, it goes like one x minus y to the relevant power. But now we know that there are quantum corrections because this theory has interactions, right? Imagine you're a perturbative person and you just want to do perturbation theory. And so this goes like g, this goes like g square. So let's compute the first coefficient. Just, actually, we're not going to compute it, but you're going to tell me the answer. You're not going to tell me this number because that requires an explicit computation. But we're doing, imagine you're doing perturbation theory here. The leading order correction will be what? Will be order g square. G square is like h bar. You notice that g square sits in the same place as h bar sits. So the expansion is in g square. Not g, it's g square. Okay. Now, but there's something weird here. Can someone tell me what, without just using your brain and not doing any computations, what do I have to put here? This is not dimensionally correct, right? Because I have dimensionless, plus something that's dimension full, and I have to soak it up with something that makes it dimensionless. So what is it?
X minus Y or something.
X minus Y. Now here I'm lying a little bit because in the real world it can be more complicated because X minus Y has length dimension one. In physics, especially in asymptotically free theories, sometimes these things can be corrected by powers of the logarithm. The logarithm has dimension zero. But anyway, that doesn't happen in three dimensions. It happens in four dimensions, but not in three dimensions. These logarithms are one of the reasons why things are complicated. Okay, and then, and if we went to second order, then it would have to be x minus y to the fourth, okay? So you see that this expansion, even if g square is arbitrarily small, if I go to larger and larger distances, becomes strongly coupled. So that's a statement that G or lambda, whatever, which has positive mass dimension, is not a good expansion at large distances. It's a very good expansion at short distances. It's like so you know that QCD is asymptotically free in four dimensions. Sometimes we use the word supernormalizable when positive mass dimension. So it means that this expansion is extremely good at very short distances, but it's terrible at large distances. And this just follows from the dimensional analysis. This is the Fourier transform of what I said yesterday, where I said if lambda has mass dimension and I do a scattering process, I will have to soak the dimensions by dividing by epsilon, by the energy, right? So if I go to an infrared, the energy goes to zero, so that expansion blows up. Is that clear? You see that it's just dimensional analysis, essentially. Modulo the issue of the logarithms. And then Mikola told me there was some question which we will discuss more of. How do I check if a theory has a symmetry? Was that the question? Or when a theory has a scale symmetry? Well, this we will check. I mean, we will discuss it. Does everyone know how to check, for example, if a theory is Lorentz invariant? Okay, how do you check it?
Well,
Yes.
We can see that there are three indices.
Right. That's one way, yeah. And but in, that's one way of saying it. Imagine you want to check it explicitly, like you want to do, you want to check that the. Let's not go that road. That will, yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Another way would be to explicitly transform everything that appears in the action and verify that the new action is the same as the old one.
Yes, very good. So the subtlety that will happen, so the it's always the same, okay? Now, for space-time symmetries, there are two subtleties. One is that, unlike global symmetries, like internal symmetries, where the Lagrangian itself is invariant, generically, for a space-time symmetry, the Lagrangian itself is not invariant. It's invariant at the total derivative, okay? So that's something to keep in mind, but that's not a problem because the action is invariant. And second, that one of the things that we'll have to cope with is that in a theory that has more space-time symmetries, like conformal fluid theories, that of course include Lorentz invariants. So when we check things or when we label operators, we'll have to label them. So we have to label them by Lorentz spin. So you're familiar that the operators in a Lorentz, in a quantum field theory are labeled by Lorentz. So in a conformal field theory, there are other quantum numbers that we have to assign to operators. In particular, and we will see is that and the other quantum number is called the scale dimension, which is the eigenvalue of that operator under the dilatation operator, the thing that the zooming in, zooming out business, okay? So in order to check scale invariance, we will have to assign, we will have to check that that Lagrangian or that theory is invariant under the dilatation transformation with the fields having the right scale eigenvalue. But we will see that there's actually, let me just say, there is a very nice way of showing, right, deriving a condition. We will derive this, I think, later. But that's more, not today. So one way that you can check if someone hands you a Lagrangian and you want to know whether the theory is a scale invariant, and we will have this condition, is to take, so you're familiar with the energy momentum tensor, correct? The energy momentum tensor is the Noether current for translations, okay? So the thing that you, that tells you whether a theory is a scale invariant is to take, you take the trace of the energy momentum tensor, this eta is the Minkowski metric, like this. So you compute your energy momentum tensor that you know and love. And if the energy momentum tensor is a total derivative of an operator, then your theory is a scale invariant. That's extremely powerful. I just told you, and you have to look at your operator and just compute its trace and see if it's a total derivative. So that's a condition we'll derive in a clever way at some point. And as I promised, all the space-time transformations have to do with the energy momentum tensor. And I think you probably have an intuitive picture because energy momentum tensor couples to the metric and the space-time transformations act on the metric. So essentially, and Tim, you know, couples to the metric. So everything is generated by the energy momentum tensor. Okay. Very good. Okay, so today we're going to discuss, we'll start with the kinematics of conformal field theories. So as I said, in physics, it's very important to separate things into kinematics and dynamics. Kinematics essentially has two parts, and today we'll has several parts. Today we'll do the most basic one. And the first thing we will discuss is geometry. Just like when you study relativistic quantum field theories, you have the Poincaré symmetry. You can discuss Minkowski space and so on. before you discuss field theories, okay? And today we're going to do that for the conformal group. So what we'll do is study the geometry of conformal transformations. Which, as I said, a conformal field theory is by definition a theory that's invariant under conformal transformations. Okay. And the thing that we will do is we'll derive the Lie algebra of conformal transformations. Okay. More generally, whenever you have a symmetry. So this is a little parenthesis. Whenever you have a symmetry, it means that there exists a group G. Okay. Why do we say there is a group? Because if you have a transformation, that transformation has an inverse, essentially. And you can concatenate transformations. So that's essentially the mathematical definition for a group. Okay. So there is such thing as called the conformal group. Okay. It is just as like there is the Poincaré group that you're familiar with. There's also we will discuss what the conformal group is. Okay. An important result is that for a continuous group, the small transformations, so infinitesimal transformations, so you have a group, there's a group element. If you make a transformation that's close to the identity, so it's a small transformation. The small transformations are determined by a Lie algebra that you're familiar with, that obey these commutation relations, where these f's are the structural constants of the Lie algebra, okay? This statement that you're familiar with can be derived in a very down-to-earth way by doing the following thing. Start with a group element. So let G be a group element of the group G. So if you wish, I'm going to use the same letter for group and Lie algebra. When you write things in LaTeX, we use different symbols. So you have G and math frac G. But anyway, I don't know how to do math frac in the blackboard. So let's say we have a group element that belongs to the group. I'm going to write group so it's not confusing. And I multiply them together. I take two group elements. Imagine I take two SO3 rotations that are parameterized by Euler angles. Okay? If you multiply them, I'm going to get another O3 element with a function, which is going to be a function, a non-trivial function of the input parameters. Okay? So now the way you can derive this, I will leave it as an exercise if you want to try it. What you do is you take G and you make a small transformation. So it means that you parameterize it by some coordinates like this. And then order, okay, like this. And the same thing with beta. And now this F alpha beta, you can convince yourself that will look like okay. If you now expand this to leading order in T's, you will be able to show that indeed, okay, I'm not really doing it. That will take me maybe to write a bit too much, but you can derive the notion of a Lie algebra from just doing infinitesimal group transformations are around the identity, okay? So if you wish, at least everything that is connected to the identity, even if it's far away from it, connected means that you can get there with a finite, even if it can be an infinite number of steps, but you can get there without continuously, can be obtained by concatenating Lie algebra generators. That's the idea that also that if you go hiking, you can get very far by doing small steps. this is like the small steps, but it determines almost everything, up to global issues, like there can be disconnected components like parity and stuff like that. Okay. So what we want to do is determine essentially the Lie algebra of conformal transformations. Okay, so what are conformal transformations? Like one definition of them. So these are space-time transformations. So I have Minkowski space. I'm going to write it as R1 d minus 1. This is Minkowski. By the way, you can define the notion of a conformal transformation for curved manifolds, but let's be simple. So a conformal transformation is a transformation that takes a point x to a point x tilde. So you have a map that you can say preserves angles between vectors. So it's a transformation that preserves angles, but not necessarily lengths, OK? And two, equivalently, preserves the light cones. So they preserve the causal structure of your spacetime. So in equations, what we will say is that a conformal transformation is a transformation that changes the line element homogeneously. Sorry. So it just is an overall rescaling of the metric. That I think it clearly means that it doesn't change the angles and it preserves the light cones, because this ds square equals zero, which is that defines the light cones, are not affected by this transformation. Okay, so now the task for the next little while is to study this equation and solve it. Okay. So the way you can write this in equation, so write it like this. So I'm just saying that I made a coordinate transformation, and I'm saying that the line element is preserved up to a scale, okay? Now, if this guy is one, what is this? What are the transformations that preserve the Poincaré? Yeah, I mean, these are the symmetries that preserve the Minkowski metric, which are known as Poincaré. I already told you that this is Minkowski metric somewhere, so I don't have to say it again. Now there's a clever way of writing this. Well, it's not clever. It's just in a way that we will think about a little bit. I want to develop some intuition what these conformal transformations are. Now let me do the following thing. Let me define an auxiliary matrix R rho mu to be dx tilde rho dx mu. And now I bring this guy to the other side, and I split them between these two guys. Okay? Then this becomes the following equation. Do you recognize this equation? What is it? I'm deaf, so.
The Lorentz transformations,
more general Poincaré, Lorentz transformation, but with the caveat that in a Lorentz transformation, what's special about Lorentz transformations? This R is a constant, right? That is just a Lorentz parameter. So here, the way that you can think about it is that a conformal transformation is a local rotation combined with a local dilatation. Okay. Very good. But now at this point, we want to figure out, okay, so for Poincaré, this is one. We know that the set of transformations is finite, right? It's the Poincaré group. Now we want to do it for the conformal, for the case where we allowed transformations. So first, in view of this discussion I had here, that everything is essentially determined by the infinitesimal transformations, let's study first the infinitesimal transformations. So what you do is you make a transformation that is close to the identity, okay? So it means that it leaves the point, it changes the point just by a little amount, zeta, that you should think of as small. Just shifts the point by a little bit, okay? This, more geometrically, this zeta mu should be thought of generates a vector field. Zeta is zeta mu d mu, okay? So now we can study this equation. Like this, okay, can someone tell me? So at this point, this function w seems arbitrary, but is it? Can someone tell me what w is?
Can I somehow take like determinant on sort of both sides?
Yes, so what do you get?
Yeah, it's like the Jacobian squared or something like that. E to w is like the Jacobian, right?
Yeah, so, okay, if I take the determinant of this guy, you get the determinant of the Jacobian square. What do you get here?
Well, the determinants of etas, they cancel, right, from both sides.
Sorry?
The etas
cancel? You're being a bit too fast. No, the determinants cancel, but, okay, just, so, tell me, if you take the determinant on this side, what do you get?
Jacobian.
You said I get dx tilde dx square, correct? Well, and the determinant of this guy, that's one. I mean, the absolute value is one. Yeah. Okay, what do I get on the right-hand side?
Oh, do I get it like the d power or something like
that? Yeah, because it's a matrix. You have the number of eigenvalues, right? So you get e to the 2d w, okay? Okay. So now when we study this equation, by plugging this thing into that, so essentially, okay, so. One over D, right? So I take this equation and I just do an infinitesimal transformation, okay? So from the first term I get eta rho sigma. So the first is just a delta function, right? Because I'm expanding, I'm just doing this, right? So the Jacobian has a term that's order zeta to the zero. And a term that is order zeta, sorry, what did I write here? Rho. And then I have delta zeta rho, delta mu, delta nu rho, sigma nu, plus d nu zeta sigma. Okay, now you have to remember, so this is a determinant. Do you know how to expand a determinant in the determinant of a matrix when the matrix is small? You remember that? It can be written in terms of the trace, yeah. So I'll assume you know how to do that. If not, you can ask me later. So essentially what I'm saying is that dx tilde dx to the power 2 over d, which is what appears on the right-hand side there, can be written as 1 plus 2 over d, the trace. And the trace is just this, okay? And this just follows from the fact that the determinant of a matrix can be written as e to the trace of the logarithm, of the matrix. And now if you expand A to be the identity plus epsilon, you recover this. You recover this thing. So from here, what I get is 1 plus 2 over D. Eta mu naught, okay? So now let's compare terms first to order zeta to the zero. So at order to the zero, you get nothing. It tells you that eta mu naught equals eta mu naught, right? And now so that's trivially verified. To order zeta, you get something interesting. You get that d mu zeta nu plus d nu zeta mu equals 2 over d eta mu nu divergence of c. So the infinitesimal conformal transformations that preserve the metric up to a scale are solutions to this equation, which is called the conformal Killing equation. So when this guy is zero, this would be what's called the Killing vector equation. Okay, this would tell you the isometries of, in this case, flat space, Minkowski space. Okay. So now the next task is to try to solve this equation in arbitrary dimensions. So maybe before doing that, actually, so the details of this are in the notes. So I don't think it's useful for me to do algebra in front of you. But I'll try to explain like a couple of key ideas. So I'll give you a way to think about it that's useful by first considering, let's consider isometries. So that this guy is zero, okay? So that these are actual isometries of Minkowski space. So you have d mu zeta nu plus d nu zeta mu equals zero, okay? So one useful perspective that I will then I develop in the notes to generalize for conformal transformation is that you can take the rho derivative of this equation, okay? And then you get d rho d mu zeta nu plus d rho d nu zeta mu equals zero, okay? And now you write this equation and you start permuting indices around. So here you permute rho mu, so the first term doesn't change, but the second term changes like this. So from here to here, I just permuted the rho mu indices, okay? And then here I permute nu and rho. Okay? So you see, I've done nothing. Nothing non-trivial, just combine the equations. And now what I notice is if I take this equation, if I add these equations and I subtract this one, let's see what happens. So you see that this guy cancels this guy, right? And this guy cancels this guy. And these two fellows are exactly the same, right? So what you get from here, you derive that the Killing vector, because we're doing an assignment, the Killing vector obeys the following equation. What this tells us is that the Killing vectors of Minkowski space are at most linear in the coordinates, which fits with what you know, because translations are, the Killing vector is a constant, and Lorentz rotations, the Killing vector is linear in the coordinate, right? So from here we derive this condition. So from here, and then putting it back into the Killing equation, you find the thing that you know and love. So notice that we went from something that could be, that looks very scary, that could be an arbitrary complicated function. What we find is that for isometries, it's just at most a linear function in the coordinates, a polynomial that's at most linear in the coordinates. So now, the reason I went through this is that by doing like doing these kind of Sudoku games, you know, being clever, you can prove that for conformal transformations, so we take this equation now with the right hand side being this thing, okay? You can prove in a similar fashion that the conformal Killing vector, which is the name associated to the solution of the conformal Killing vector, conformal Killing equation, is a vector made out of polynomials in the coordinates that are at most quadratic. That's nice because that's a finite dimensional space, right? So up to some little caveat that we'll discuss in a second. What we find is that this already tells us that the set of conformal transformations is finite dimensional. This was not obvious from the beginning because you had some crazy equation which looks like everything is arbitrary. You could have many solutions, but this tells you immediately that it's finite dimensional because the number of polynomials you can write down is finite. Okay, except there is an exception. So let's go to two dimensions. Chalk gets too small. So in two dimensions, you can take this equation. So maybe by taking that equation and putting mu nu equals one, you find this equation. As you can see, so the equals two, something interesting happens, right? Because this guy is one, and then you can do some cancellations. And by putting mu equals one and nu equals two, you get the right-hand side is zero, and then you get this. Does someone recognize? So we're now in the plane, right? Just in R1, or actually, or R2. Will be quite loose between Lorentz continuation and Euclidean rotations. Do you recognize these equations from somewhere? Yeah, so this is called the Cauchy-Riemann equation. And it's useful to introduce complex coordinates. And then this equation is just a statement that essentially any holomorphic vector field is a solution. And that's why the set of conformal transformations in two dimensions is infinite dimensional. And I think you will see that later when Mikola teaches you. And it is the fact that the conformal transformations in two dimensions are infinite dimensional that allows you to go extremely far in solving conformal field theories in two dimensions, and it's much harder in higher dimensions. Okay. Good. So now let's parameterize, let's write very concretely. So for here, I want to do the analog of what we did here for Poincaré. So here I wrote down the Killing vector. Okay, this part of the Killing vector is associated with to which transformation? Translation, so let's call it P mu. And this one? So yeah, I'm gonna be loose about putting it up, yeah, then put the lower indices, okay, like this. Good, so now we're gonna do the same thing for conformal. Okay, so I just want to write down most general conformal Killing vector. Okay. So of course it will include what we already know. And as I said, this is associated to P mu. This is associated to Lorentz transformations. There is another thing you can have which is linear, which has a different Lorentz structure, which is this. Can you tell me what this transformation generated by lambda does?
Scaling.
The scaling, yeah. Because you take a point and just dilate it by one plus lambda. So yeah, it's going to be confusing. I don't know, again, I don't know how to distinguish D for dilatation and D for dimension. Hopefully it's clear. But if you want, I can put a hat. But I mean, yeah, it would be weird to confuse this with the space-time dimension, but OK. If I forget to put a hat, forgive me. And then there is a very specific combination of a quadratic part. And that generates a slightly weird transformation because it's non-linear. We're used to linear things in life. Non-linear things were not so useful too, right? There is a way of linearizing this by going to higher dimensions, but I don't think we have time for doing that. So there's a set of transformations parameterized by a vector, a D vector. For translations, we call it A. For this weird object, we call it B. That takes this very specific form. And these guys are generated, are associated to transformations. So since V is a vector, the corresponding transformations will also have a Lorentz vector. We call it K mu. OK, so this guy we call it dilatation operator. This guy is called a special conformal. Since you don't know what to call it, you say this. So this is something is a bit less intuitive, but I can tell you maybe develop some intuition about this. In a sense, they are to the origin what translations are to space-time infinity. Okay, so translations have the property that they do not touch infinity, right? They leave the infinity invariant. So a special transformation is the opposite. These are transformations that do not touch the origin, as you can see. Okay, so if you wish, these are one way to think about it loosely, intuitively, is that these are translations around infinity, essentially. So let's count parameters. Remember, we're in the business, so we did the geometry. We understood the Killing vector, the conformal Killing vectors. Now we associated generators to each linearly independent Killing vectors, conformal Killing vectors. And I want to count how many there are. So how many generators are there associated to here? D? No, just say it. Don't be shy. What about here?
Times D minus 1 or something.
Yes. One here, right? And then here also D. So the dimension of the space of conformal Killing vectors is just adding these things together, which is D plus 2, D plus 1 over 2. So this is the dimension of the conformal algebra. So we have established that it is finite dimensional, which we already had established by virtue of the fact that the polynomial was truncated at quadratic order. Good. But now we have to still a task to do. We have to determine the commutation relations between the various generators, right? Can someone tell me how, given this information and nothing else, how would you determine the commutation relation between P and D? How would you do that? You can think while I erase.
I guess I would represent p as a derivative that I know how to derivative x on x, and then I would just keep using Leibniz rule until I would.
Yes, that's correct. So perhaps the more geometrical way to saying is that to each transformation we can associate a root here, a vector field. Okay, I don't know where I put it, but okay, this vector field, right? And we can associate a vector field to each of the generators. So then what you can do, you know, vector fields in Riemannian geometry, formally algebra by the Lie bracket. So you can take vector field number one. Oh, my back. Vector field number two. And this will give you another vector field number three. And then essentially this is what you said. So this, since this zeta I is zeta I m dm, and you know what this gadget is, right? This gadget is exactly what I wrote here. By taking derivatives and so on, you can get that. So, okay, this is gonna be painful, but I think this has to be done once in one's life. So now let me write down the commutators. So the ones for let's start with Lorentz. Can someone tell me what do you get? On the right hand side of this. So these are just the Lorentz transformations, do you know?
It's four times.
Okay, how do you fix this? Well, there's an overall sign that doesn't matter, but how do you fix? If you write one, yeah. So you write one, and then everything is determined by the fact that this is antisymmetric and this is antisymmetric. So you write eta mu rho m nu sigma. Well, but one thing you have to convince yourself is that, well, first of all, just by Lorentz invariance, you cannot have written anything else on the right-hand side. You could think, why couldn't I have gotten something else? But you see that you don't have the right indices to put anything else from the generators. And then everything else is determined by mu antisymmetry. Okay, let me not write this, please. I think you know how to do this. Okay, so there are three other terms. What about if I do the commutator with the translations? What do you get?
Get
B again or something? Yes. But OK. I want you to think a bit geometrically. Actually, one way to think about it is that these are the Lorentz generators. Every object here should be in a Lorentz representation. OK? This weird commutators and so on is a statement that this guy is a spin 2. And what is translations with respect to Lorentz transformations? In which representation is the translation in? It's what's called in the vector representation, right? You have a vector, it has an index. So then what I'm going to write down is just fix is the statement that P is in the vector representation of the Lorentz group. So it's eta mu rho P sigma. And again, I anti-symmetrize in mu rho. Okay, let me not be lazy and write it. Oh, sorry, I made a mess here. P nu, right? And now I flip mu nu. And you can convince yourself that if you do, I don't know if you've ever done it, but if you do this exercise with the Killing vectors, you get that. Now, from what I just told you, can someone guess what M nu? Now we get outside into the wild world of conformal algebra. So, given what I told you, what can you tell me about this, the commutator of Lorentz with a special conformal? In which representation is this guy?
Right.
It's a vector, right? It's a vector, so.
I think we will get like P replaced
by
K.
It's exactly the same with P replaced by K. This just tells you that K is a vector. Okay, and now without doing any computation, what do you think you're going to get if you commute with dilatations?
Zero.
Zero. It's just a statement that D is a scalar. Scalar. So here, let me write it because that's my job. Actually, it's not, but anyway. Yes. You see? So I want you to develop a way of thinking about it, about thinking things that you can come up with the answer just using symmetries. You can do all this crazy stuff, and you should do it, by the way, these commutators. But the fact that you get here is just fixed by the index structure of things, okay? That's all you could have gotten. Okay. Okay, let's try this. The next two are super important. So I want to know the commutator of D with translations. Can someone do more or less quickly in their head or using some other argument? Well, okay. So first of all, what can appear on the right-hand side? A gadget, which is a vector, right? What are the vectors available to us?
P and K.
P and K. So okay, now that determining which one we get, we really need to use this. Sorry? So can you tell me what it is?
It should be P, no?
It's P, yeah. And that's intuitive, because if you rescale...
Infinity doesn't have that.
Sorry?
I think infinity doesn't... Because K does work on infinity, right?
Yes. But the way I would say is that... Yeah, I mean... These are just words, but yes.
Like dilatations and then translation is like one big
thing. Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's like you translate by 1 plus lambda, essentially. Well, these I's are a bit a matter of convention, by the way. But you can check very simply. So take x mu, if that sounded a bit too abstract. That's a bad idea. Let's use x. You see that if you take the commutator, this guy eats this fellow, right? So, and you're only left with d mu. That's why you have a d mu here, okay? Is that clear? Whenever you do these commutators, I don't know, I mean, you're familiar with this, you should think of this as there being an arbitrary function here, okay? So that the cross terms cancel. If we do that, so now it will not be shocking if I tell you that if I do with k mu, I get this. Now, this is very important. What you see is the following thing. I mean, that's the only thing it could have been. I mean, you've seen commutators like this before. What does it remind you? If I think of D as a Hamiltonian, this looks like a up to conventions with signs. One of them is a raising operator, and the other one is a lowering operator, right? This will be very important later when we construct the way the conformal symmetry is realized on fields and how dilatation acts on fields. Okay, and the last one, well, the last one that's non-zero, okay, here, a priori, what could you get on the right-hand side? Huh? You can say it. Don't be sure. I mean, if it's wrong, it doesn't matter.
Maybe M.
M? What else can happen? Because what's available to us are the generators and the Minkowski metric, right?
So you can get some D beta mu nu or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. So you get both. Usually in physics, whatever is possible happens, so... So that's it. That's a conformal algebra. Notice that this also looks a little bit like, if you wish, A and A dagger, okay? And this is like saying the Hamiltonian is A times A dagger. OK, so this is the conformal algebra. So if you wish the conformal algebra, yes.
K is,
No, you can say it.
K commutes, right?
Yeah, everything with itself commutes, yes. So if you wish, this defines the conformal algebra, but this may sound like just a random collection of commutators. The next step that you can do is to turn it into something that is more familiar to a Lie algebra that you would recognize. So what I'm going to do is do something that looks a bit esoteric. I'm going to introduce additional space-time coordinates to represent this algebra in a way that you will tell me, oh, this is the blah, blah, blah Lie algebra. Well, we'll make that experiment in a second. So we start with our Minkowski coordinates, and then I introduce two additional coordinates, xd plus 1. Okay, so these are our space-time coordinates, and these are just fake coordinates that I'm introducing for now. Okay. And now let me call Lmn the group of orthogonal transformations acting on this bigger space, okay? So it's an antisymmetric, just like the Lorentz generators are antisymmetric in the two space-time indices, this is gonna be an antisymmetric matrix. And since I have d plus two dimensions, right? I have d plus one plus two, this generates the Lie algebra, okay, so here, I was not super careful here. Maybe I should try to be careful here. It just happens that if you want to be careful and you want to be a Lorentzian signature, is that here we have a Minkowski metric. We have the Minkowski. So you have to tell me what metric do I put here. So the eta mn metric that I'm going to put here. I want to think of this as a Minkowski space in d plus two dimensions. And what I'm going to say is that it has the time-like eigenvalue that you know and love. Then a whole bunch of pluses, these are the x mu's. Then you have another one that's a plus, and the last one is a minus, okay? And this Lmn, okay, maybe I should call it eta hat, not to confuse it with the space-time metric. And these Lmn's generate the Lorentz transformations in this bigger space. Okay. Now, what would you call this Lorentz group? What is a Lorentz group preserving this Minkowski metric?
SO2D.
SO2D.
Was it d plus one?
Or? No, there are d plus two. There are d plus two coordinates, right?
Right. Okay.
So d minus. D plus one plus two, okay? So now what I'm going to show, I'm gonna tell you, and you can check, that I can write linear combinations of the conformal algebra in terms of L, such that the Lie algebra of the conformal group is SO2, D, okay? This SO2, D is also very important in ADS. These are the isometries of ADS space. And this is not a coincidence. Okay, so now I'm telling you that if I take Lmn and I say that when the indices mu nu are mu nu, and I write like this, so I'm telling you is that take the commutators that I wrote before, take these linear combinations, then these linear combinations will obey exactly this Lie algebra. Okay, so this proves that the conformal algebra in this spacetime dimension is a set 2 comma d. And inside here, see the subalgebra, which is the Lorentz algebra, SO1, comma d minus 1. This is the Lorentz, and this is the conformal. I should probably stop. There are more things I want to say, but okay, so maybe I will not say more things, but are there any questions about this? Yes.
Can you remember which is the signature to be minus plus or less and a minus in the end?
Well, it's not that we choose. It's algebras, Lie algebras. I'm saying that it is not a choice. It is a consequence of these commutators of the Lie algebra.
So basically, if we want to recreate those commutators, we have
yes.
to pick this.
Yes, you have to pick two time-like directions
I see.
And the minus two space-like directions. It's not a choice.
I get it.
Yeah. And importantly, these guys are the isometries of anti-de Sitter space in d plus one dimensions. And this is this whole idea CFT nonsense. That isometries of the space, as you approach the boundary, act as conformal transformations of the boundary conformal field theory. So far we've discussed the Lie algebra. So these are the transformations that are continuously connected to the identity. Just like the Lorentz group has disconnected components, The conformal group also has disconnected components. And we may say something about that next time. So we'll do that. And then the next step will be, because this was all just, we didn't discuss field theory or anything, right? So the next step will be just like when we just study relativistic quantum field theory, the first step that you have to do is you have to represent, how to realize the Poincaré group on your fields. The thing that we'll have to learn how to do is how to realize the conformal algebra on our fields, okay? And that's what we will do. And we'll have to think about what are the quantum numbers that are associated to this conformal algebra. So we'll see that it's Lorentz spin and dilatations. All right, yes.
So this discussion applies to d more than 2, or it's valid in d equals 2 as well?
No, in d equals 2, no, because I said that here, yeah, so in d equals 2, let me say something concretely. So you can find the basis. Of the Killing vector fields. And then this n is any integer, right? There is something to be said that this vector field, if you're on R2 or you conformally compactify into the Riemann sphere, the only not all vector fields, actually, only three of them are globally defined. One of them have a singularity at infinity. But what you can do in doing the same exercise is that if you look at the commutator of, and we call the, okay, in two dimensions, we call these generators Ln and Lm, then they satisfy this algebra, which is called the Virasoro algebra. Which is an infinite dimensional algebra. To make it even more interesting, in two dimensions, when you're studying a non-trivial conformal field theory, actually this algebra is modified. It has what's called an anomaly. And it's corrected. Actually, remember I talked about C the other day? That C that is miraculous? That C is this C. That C appears all over the place, but this is one place where it appears, where you have delta n plus m, 0. And here's something that I forget, but some simple function of n and m. It's sufficient to write as a function of n.
N cubed minus n.
Sorry?
N cubed minus n.
N cubed minus n?
Divided by 12.
By 12. I would never remember this in my life. Impossible.
Impossible.
But so it's an example of an anomaly. So classically means Hilbert is doing pathetic geometry, right? We're not the H bar is not anywhere. But if you introduce H bar, actually this C in a certain sense is proportional to H bar, and the algebra is modified, deformed by the anomaly. So yeah, so in two dimensions, the as I said before, the Lie algebra is not S2,2, is the Virasoro algebra, which is infinite dimensional. And by the way, you have two copies of the Virasoro algebra, because you have this one, but then you have the anti-holomorphic ones. And the Ln bar satisfy the same one. So Ln bar with Ln bar gives you the same bars everywhere, and the left and the right commute with each other. So you have two commuting copies of the Virasoro algebra. And the only talk, okay, yeah.
So basically here only L0, L minus one, and L one is global, right? So
yes.
It kind of matches this one. And here.
Yes, exactly.
About two dimensions, everything is global, right? Well, algebra is local, but like,
Yes. The transformation will defined everywhere. Yes. Yeah. So the SO in two dimensions, if you put plug here SO 2,2, so if you put d=2, so in d=2, you get SO 2,2, which you can show that it's the same as SL2R times SL2R, and these are precisely the algebra generated by the L1, L1, and minus one, and L0 bar. L1 bar, L minus 1 bar. So this fellow is in two dimensions, is associated with the globally defined transformations on the Riemann sphere. I think we're getting kicked out or what?
Well, the next class started in 4 minutes.
Okay. All right, have a good weekend.